Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest is the poet Jacob Victorine. Jacob Victorine is a performance poet and MFA candidate at Columbia College Chicago, where he teaches undergraduate writing and rhetoric. A member of the 2011 Jersey City National Slam Team, his poems have appeared in Pank, two Uphook Press anthologies, and Muzzle Magazine, for which he also writes book reviews. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Renee.
Thank you for being here.
No, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Can you start us off with some poems?
Yes, of course. I'm going to start with some poems from a series that I'm currently working on that focuses on self-immolation. Just very quickly, self-immolation is a political form of protest in which a person lights him or herself on fire. And obviously, it's a very extreme form of protest. So this first poem is called Sita Enters the Fires of Vietnam. After hearing these hair-raising accusations, Sita became bowed with shame. O son of Sumitra, prepare for me a pyre, the only remedy for this calamity. Under the rule of Ngo Dinh Diem, South Vietnam had privileged the agenda of the country's Catholic minority, discriminating against its Buddhist monks. Agonized by these false rumors, I cannot bear living. I shall enter a blazing fire, the only course left for me now that I've been rejected in a public gathering. After saying this, the monk sat at a busy downtown intersection. Two of her fellow monks poured gasoline over her as a large crowd of Buddhists and reporters watched. Sita then entered the blazing fire with an undisturbed mind, palms pressed in an arrowhead against her chest, feet tracing a narrow path through the flames. Over the course of a few moments, she burned while seated in the lotus position, the body slowly withering and shriveling up, her head blackened and charring. All the women screamed when they saw her falling like a stream of clarified butter offered with mantras to a sacred fire. Adorned with sparkling ornaments, she shone like freshly melted gold. This next poem is called Flammable Matter and is very much in the direction of the process of writing about these horrific events. I pluck their ripe names, hold them on my tongue till they redden. How many fires can I fit in my mouth before I burn too? Last week, my father told me, spontaneous combustion. A body's bones can become sets of stones rubbing against each other in sparks. I didn't believe him. Is this how reporters feel? I don't know what a man on fire looks like sprinting down the street or standing calmly as his t-shirt melts with skin. Richard Pryor once set himself ablaze, freebasing cocaine and drinking 151-proof rum. Dressed in a bright red suit in front of a microphone and an audience of thousands, he lit a match inches from his face, bounced it back and forth, and joked, "What's that?" Richard Pryor running down the street. This poem is called Conjuring. Religion is everywhere for us, said Kai's mother, but it is not stable. Every time we conjure a rock, a hand picks it up to throw it. Hours after confiscating cell phones and threatening witnesses, Chinese security blamed separatist plots and said Kai suffered from depression. The last image of Kai is a 5-liter can of fuel. Tibetans say the self-immolations are born from what remains. It's not so hard to pray, said Kai. Even in the summer pastures, a small tent sheltered a sculpture of the Buddha and a picture of the Dalai Lama. When Kai returned to Machu in the fall, her school was engulfed in protest. A new government policy bound the high pastures with barbed wire. Police cars and government buildings burned into the morning as students watched, cupping small candles from the wind. Hundreds were detained, but the unrest did not stop. Kai entered a public toilet, discarding her traditional Tibetan overdress, and doused herself in petrol. She walked out into the vegetable market and became a report of another burning. This next poem focuses on a man named Malachi Reischer, who set himself on fire about 6 years ago in Chicago to protest the war in Iraq, and left a lot of documents about his thought process, including an obituary and also a mission statement. Everywhere people move into darkness, alleyways that run arms between them. Bruno received a package including a will, keys, and instructions on what should be done. All evidence pointed to the body being his friend. "He hasn't shown up," said Malachi's sister. But police were still confirming dental records, his car found nearby. Bruno began making calls. The jazz locals were certain. It was the man best known for documenting. Paul Rutherford, Gold Sparkle, Isotope 217. Those were other people's bands. Malachi was fiercely modest. For at least the last decade, he was an empty bottle with a familiar face. An eyewitness said turning vehicles didn't stop to watch a man become voltage on the highway. The Sun-Times once tried to do a piece, but he declined, saying he wanted to write his own obituary. In Chicago, Malachi is not a crown or a halo, but a small item of a man who set himself on fire during rush hour Friday morning.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Jacob Victorine, reading from a collection of his poems about self-immolation. So my first question to you is, what moved you to explore this subject in poetry?
Well, initially, this started with an assignment in Tony Trigilio's class at Columbia College Chicago, in which we had to use a news story as kind of the material for a poem. And I happened upon a piece on some Moroccan protesters who set themselves on fire after they were denied food and water. And the story really just struck a chord with me. And the idea that there are people out there that are so desperate that they have to go to setting themselves on fire as a form of protest in order to get attention and to make themselves be seen.
How do you, with stories that are that desperate and that emotionally intense, what is it like for you to work with that kind of subject matter?
This may sound strange, but I really enjoy it. I think mainly because I'm very, very political. Mm. And I don't think of poets as protesters. I think it would be arrogant to say that. But it does make me feel like I'm doing something to at least spread the word or, you know, in some way honor the dead, you know, or at least kind of get the voices out there to a wider audience and to create more awareness.
And I do hear that resistance in the poems against these people being ignored. I'm just by virtue of writing about them, and there's a lot of naming happening. There's also the line in one of the poems about, I believe, the woman in Tibet, where she walks out and became a report of another burning. And but the tone of the poems is very almost reporter-like itself. And so I think I'm curious about how you consider the individual and the life that's gone in these poems, because you have that interest in honoring them.
Yeah.
What's that like in the writing of them?
Well, I do use a lot of appropriated material in the poems. So very often I will start with a news story, and then I comb through it and I'll pull lines that I like or that I feel like are important. Sometimes I'll flip them, you know, I'll replace words. I'm not only working with fact, you know, I also add some of my own memories and some myth in some way. Mm-hmm. I do have poems that are more focused on the individual and even from the perspective of certain individuals that have self-immolated. I guess I try to think about what maybe they want to be seen mm-hmm. as best as I can. And often I do even use material that's been left in, behind. There have been a number of mission statements. I don't want to say suicide notes, because it is a form of protest. Mm-hmm. But I just try to honor that material with understanding that I'm not a reporter. I'm not working with fact. I am injecting my own memories and even, again, creating myth maybe to move towards an emotional resonance and maybe even an emotional truth.
That makes a lot of sense. And I ask because it's a tall order to take on the task of writing a poem and also to do it with the intention of honoring someone who's protested in such a drastic way. I wonder if you could maybe read us some more poems and maybe include some of the ones that are from that perspective.
Of course. This poem is called "Respect for Fire is Respect That's Been Taught." The flame is always dominant, the vigilance always the same. The son of Holocaust survivors heads for the crowd of Israelis that fills the streets. Far away from his mother and father, Moshe Silman is 94% burns to the body, a tower of flames reaching toward what we can only name. We underestimate the need to understand through touch. "He sacrificed himself," said Moshe's sister, after giving the doctors permission to remove the tubes feeding life into what was left of her brother. He arrived in Tel Aviv Saturday night with gasoline and a suicide note. "The state of Israel stole from me and left me with nothing. I will not be homeless. The arsonist is the most honest of criminals. He only denies he knows how to light his stove." This next poem is from the perspective of Shahrab Siddur and uses an interview with him. He is someone who self-immolated unsuccessfully, so did not end up killing himself. And he is Buddhist, which many, now close to 50, I think, of the self-immolations in the past year have been from Buddhists, really protesting China's control over Tibet. "I carried a Tibetan flag I forgot to wave, a lighter, press releases, a bottle of paint thinner. There will always be scars, of course. I still have dressings on one leg. Not until the hospital. I don't remember shouting as they flew through me. The police know I have protested there before. Delhi's diplomatic quarter, the Chinese embassy where I got off the bus. I put a statement on Facebook. I was sure he would understand. My father, a refugee at 4. Sorry for all my mistakes. I turned off my phone. If only I lit more than my legs. Time to pour the thinner. Brothers and sisters burned awake with the world's attention. Because I am still alive, it was a failure. I've seen the news." Waist Deep. "Videos rarely show the protest. Fire and aftermath. I hear ash. Watch the spine's hollow wick catch the flames of black bones. Iris is murky and darkened with dense blood. We never saw the earthquake, the landslide pinning what could be branches, but are body parts of a family. I show my students photographs of a girl trapped waist-deep in mud, the body sinking into flames, skin flaking and fluttering away in ashy scales. Try not to breathe them in. This next poem is from the perspective of Malachi Reischer. I read a poem that touches on his experience before, and it begins with an epigraph. I only get one death. I want it to be a good one. Malachi Reischer. Solo in the key of Malachi Reischer. I've jumped from an airplane and fled a burning building. A 7-ton stainless steel abstract rendering of flame in high wind. Among friends, the public, on blogs, and comment boxes across the internet, the same debate. What is God? Many think God is Santa Claus, rewarding good with presents and punishing bad with lumps of coal. But God is the Easter Bunny, hiding a video camera, a canister of gasoline, a sign. What has happened to my country? God does not choose. God does not make, God does not endorse, God does not smite, God does not sit on a cloud of prayers. He does not burn or weep or bear, but watches the bird drop even to its death. Am I therefore a martyr or a terrorist? A sign that reads, "Thou shalt not kill," or a video that has yet to be released by police, more concerned with television and ringtones than a human body so badly charred it was impossible to determine its sex. Anyone can stand over the Kennedy Expressway just west of the downtown loop. Maybe some will be scared enough to walk from their waking dream state at the base of a 25-foot sculpture, the flame of the millennium. I want the simplest form. Maybe you are less happy. Maybe not. Muhammad's. He'd had a vegetable stand for 7 years when a policewoman confiscated his goods, spat in his face, and insulted his dead father. Muhammad went to city headquarters to complain. He never got past the doors. An hour later, he returned to the building of arched shutters and set himself ablaze. He did not die, but lingered in a hospital bed, fumes of burnt flesh seeping through nurses' uniforms and even the clothes of his guests. There was so much anger, President Ben Ali visited. 10 days after Muhammad died, the dictator's 23-year rule of Tunisia was over. A few hundred feet from where he burned, hundreds of young men erect handwritten banners. "We are all people of sacrifice," reads one. "Not a single official has come," says Muhammad, an unemployed teacher. "We need to clean the system." Another Muhammad leans against the graffitied wall and lights a cigarette. "I have a PhD and work in a supermarket," he says. It smells of him.
If you've just tuned in, you are listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Jacob Victorine. There are some interesting moments of statement that sort of remove the speaker a little bit from the poems that happen occasionally, and I think that they're striking because they seem to consider the reader, and in some cases, I don't want to say implicate, but notice the person who's reading and ask them things. There's a statement, "Try not to breathe it in," about the ash of the woman who was burning. And the closing line of another one that says, "Maybe you are less happy, maybe not." Can you talk about those sorts of moments?
Yeah. Well, I hope that it also comes through that I'm implicating myself as someone documenting this process and working with the material. But again, I think so many of these people just want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And Whether it's by, you know, a U.S. news source or China, many of these people are kind of portrayed as being crazy. And I try to maintain a level of empathy, which I think is extremely important in working with material of this nature. And I hope I'm at least a little bit successful in doing it. But I try to look at the circumstances, and I feel that these people aren't crazy, especially if you look at someone like Malachi Reischer, who was painted that way. And I think it's more that there's some people that either just have tremendous difficulty handling what they see as injustice, and there are other people that are just in such awful situations, whether it's because of political unrest or hunger or war. And, you know, living in the U.S., you know, many of us are very privileged. You know, I feel like I'm a very privileged person. To be a poet in the U.S., you have to be a privileged person. And so I try to kind of ask these questions to the reader or the listener, so that they have things to consider. You know, I don't want it to be overly didactic, you know, where I'm preaching to the reader, but I do hope that these poems get the reader and myself to think about these situations and really what the difference is between someone living in the U.S. and someone somewhere else in the midst of desperation.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe them as didactic. I think that there's a lot of restraint, actually, in the voice of the poems. I want to switch gears a little bit because I think that maybe this ties in a bit to some of the issues that you're touching on in terms of having empathy and sort of recognizing the intention of these protesters, and also just sort of to get to the technique of writing these. You have a lot of descriptions of the mechanics of setting a fire, like we hear about the petrol and the paint thinner and the gasoline. But there are also a lot of there's also a lot of language that uses the imagery of fire in a sort of more, I guess, what we would call poetic or elevated way. You have, you know, halos and gold and phrases like they burned awake with the world's attention, and that's something that comes up frequently in the poems, and that seems like a very intentional move in the writing of these. I'm curious about how. Just how you go about writing that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that really is the, I don't even know if duality is the right word. It's the closest I can come right now, but the duality of fire, in that it is something that we worship in a lot of ways, and there is beauty to it, but then it's equally dangerous. And so, you know, I do think that part of this is really kind of the strange beauty of someone setting him or herself on fire. You know, if you look at someone like, and I try my best with many of the names, I don't necessarily think I'm completely on point, but Thich Quang Duc, who set himself on fire during the Vietnam War.
Yeah, those are award-winning photos, yeah, of the Buddhist monk who burned himself. Those, I think, won Pulitzer Prizes.
Yeah, and also it's just kind of the meditative state to be able to sit in a fire and not move. And so I've even borrowed some things from the psychoanalysis of fire and things of that nature to, I guess, really just as far as material and inspiration in being able to write about something that, again, is horrific. And I wish no one felt like they had to do this. But the reason they are using fire is, in a way, because, number one, it is a slow-ish process. You know, it does take a while. And because just the aesthetics of it, the way it looks, draws attention. Mm-hmm. You know, just like people, you know, are drawn to a campfire, you know, or are drawn to light at night.
Can you read us some more?
Yes, although I'm going to change gears, if that's okay.
That's fine.
And read some poems not from the series now. Although this poem is almost completely appropriated, did something that is maybe breaking, I don't want to say it's breaking the ethics, but it's stretching them as far as eavesdropping. And I listened to a conversation between two people and kind of created this character out of it. Once he cleans you up, you ought to stay clean. I don't know where to go. I got no resources. 7 years. I had to do time. They gave me probation. Then they gave me a deal. They said, you want to be safe? Said, when you get out, take the Bible with you. This is what I've been reading. Psalm 19:13. I'm just trying to rustle up some money to get out of this predicament. How much does one of those IDs cost? $20 or $30. I checked when I first got up here. I don't know if that's a driving ID or state ID. How does that help me? I can go to a shelter. I can get food stamps. I can get a job. I've had people offer, but I didn't have no ID. I can get a phone. Free government phones. They give you 250 minutes. I don't need a whole lot. I can get the ID down here, then live at the shelter. 2 or 3 months ago, it wasn't all bad. But now, it's the breaking stage. How did I get saved? It was just a change in experience. A long ride. You know what I'm saying? Let's see right here. And God shall rule over. So whenever sin takes you over, have you ever seen a cat take over a bird? And when the bird gives up, so does the cat. But when it starts to move again, the cat pounces like that. That's why we can't do it on our own. 10:23. You ever see a palm tree in a storm? It bends. Have you ever seen how tall it is? It's got roots just as deep. It should be an uncomfortable feeling. This last poem is for my girlfriend, Sarah. I've tried to avoid the many false trappings of before. Back when the time is right. And sorry. And take me. And can't was later. I meant give and lips. So when I said rest and shoulder or forever, then I meant right now and here. Some men say beautiful, and it is not the most precise. Only the right word is woolen or wood. I do not know if these legs are ways to get closer, enamored with walking the sky like some ancient deity. If legs can grow legs the same way my father holds my mother, to stretch each foot of predetermined time a little more than space. I would rather walk the glass between what one says and the curl against space when light is still at 3 in the morning. I once left you with this pair of legs. Even in its own language, the mouth must relearn.
The poetry of Jacob Victorine. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you once again for having me.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.